The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, right here at Progressive Radio Network, and you can hear all of our shows from The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z by visiting ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, go to Archives, and go to The Natural Nurse. And we're so happy to have you on board with us, and we really look forward to getting all your emails through NaturalNurse.com or The Natural Nurse at Facebook, and we're very happy to get feedback from you. Most of it seems to be really positive, but if you guys have something to say, you know, that you're not happy about or show suggestions, we'd love to hear that as well. Today we have as our guest David Gunn, and David is a scientist whose career spans over 30 years in engineering, management experience, and as an integral member of numerous scientific teams. He has been successful at developing cutting-edge technologies, such as the first ultra-high-density magnetic recording medium. And this included research into the manufacture of rare earth magnets. During the late 1990s, in conjunction with UCLA, Mr. Gunn began his research in the detection and labeling of nano-sized particles, which are found in homeopathic solutions. He was involved with the Department of Immunology at UCLA, researching an isolated particle as a stimulant of T cells, which is part of the human immune system, with more than 57 blind studies all demonstrating a dramatic, significant improvement in immune response. Mr. Gunn has organized educational symposiums on crucial environmental issues, including global climate change and nuclear waste cleanup, in conjunction with the U.S. Department of Energy and Los Alamos National Laboratories. Today, we are focusing on his new book, which is called Double Helix Water. Has the 200-year-old mystery of homeopathy been solved, which he wrote with his co-author, Dr. Xu-Jin Lo. And also, the book has a very interesting introduction by my friend and colleague, Dr. Norman Shealy, MD, who I would say is the preeminent medical doctor who focuses on energy medicine in this country. So thank you so much for joining us today, Mr. Gunn.
Ellen, thank you. What a nice introduction.
Well, that's from your bio, so if it doesn't sound familiar, I don't know.
Yeah, well, great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, I've been looking at your interesting book, which is called Double Helix Water. And, of course, it is based on some very significant science and some things that are actually new in the scientific community. But would you say that this book is also written so if someone who has more mainstream background and not a deep scientific background could also understand the book?
Right. The first section of the book, about the first 100 pages, is really written for a layperson's understanding. There's no scientific terms. I tried to write that as general as I could, because most of that, the second 200 pages or so, and the book's about 300 some pages long, that second part is very technical, and it's really written for scientists and people that are in this field, and those are published papers that have been published over the years. So, and we wrote a lot of this stuff 15 years ago, and I told Yen, my partner, I said, you know, no one's ever going to read this unless we write a book that can be understood by anyone. So the first section of that book is dead simple. Anyone can read that book. Norman Shealy did a really nice job of writing an introduction to the book, and it really is sort of like the history of the discovery, how we came about the discovery, and in very simple terms, what this double helix water is.
Yes, and that's the name of the book, Double Helix Water. And also a website where people can find out more beyond today's show is that whole word, doublehelixwater.com. Now, what is even, let's start, rather than talking about what is double helix water, what even is a helix and what is a double helix for those people who are not familiar with those terms?
Well, most people will have some, would recognize a piece of DNA. A DNA is if you took a ladder, like you're going to climb up in your house on a ladder, if you took that ladder and just twisted that ladder so it made a spiral, that would be two helixes. A helix is a spiral. So when you have a double helix, it's like take a ladder and twist that ladder, and then that's a double helix. And so, I mean, that's about as simple as I can get on it, but that's they're really caused in a sense by our water or by my DNA, which is kind of the most famous double helix. They're caused because of the way that the charges are arranged, how things want to stick together. And so they stick together, and they can only stick together or bond together in a particular pattern. And when they do that, they form a helix and a double helix. And if you look
that's a good explanation. And I think you're right. A lot of people have actually seen that. It's used in commercials, that visualization now of that twisted ladder.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what would be different about the double helix water versus other forms of water? And let's talk about, first of all, what are the normal three forms of water that people certainly can recognize?
Well, we're all familiar with a glass of water. We've all probably sitting and had a glass of water this morning. That's a liquid phase. And, you know, and all of us had a soda or something today, and we had lots of ice in that soda. That's an ice phase or a solid phase. And then if we put water on a stove and turn it on, we're going to get and heat it up about 212 degrees Fahrenheit, you're going to get a steam. Those are the common forms of water. Those are all temperature related. In physics, those are called a first order phase transition. Means that the phase will change, and it will change because of temperature. You know, we freeze water, it turns to ice. We warm it up a little bit, it turns to water. We warm it up further, it turns to steam. Now, Yin and I, years ago, we didn't look for this new phase of water, but we stumbled over a very unusual phenomena in some water, which led us through a whole series of steps to discover that there is a particle in water, and that particle is actually solid. It's actually a solid form of water, and yet it is not temperature related. It's related to some very specific conditions that occur in water. And they have to do with some pressures that have to do with inside certain particles that get in water have certain pressures around them. And they make a new particle out of water, and that water is actually solid.
So you know what I'd like to ask you here? I was a science teacher for many years, as well as an avid science student. And I think most people, if they even think back to their chemistry, even in grade school, you know those little fudge factors that you had to add in terms of energy that was taken in or given off by water? And there were always mysteries about water, like why did water expand when it got colder, when almost every other material contracts when it gets colder? And they basically always told us years ago, well, no one knows why, and let's just memorize that it does that. Do you think perhaps this unveiling of this particular particle that you discovered may help to explain some of those water mysteries?
Absolutely. Because what water is in constant, it has many different many different shapes to it. And these have been studied for years in physics, and they're called, it forms different size clusters, and they call these flickering clusters because it's always in motion. And it's not easy to study. It's a difficult subject. But what's going to happen with this study is now, because now we can hold water still. In other words, well, like for instance, last October we published a paper in Physics Letters A in October of this last year, and we made enough of this water that you could actually see it. We made it, we dehydrated it, we put it on a slide, and you could just pick, you didn't even need a microscope, you could pick this up and just look at it and hold it up against the light and go, wow, there's a powder on this thing. But yet when we analyzed that powder, it showed it was water. So the thing is that we've been able to sort of stop the motion of these water molecules. We've condensed them into a solid particle. From that understanding, it's sort of like the first piece of code of water. It's sort of like, we like to call it the genesis phase of water. We'll probably be able to understand a lot of these properties that have been, you know, everybody's scratching their head over for many, many years of why does this happen and why does that happen. Well, you need to know the basic fundamental of any model, and I think this is probably going to be the basic fundamental of the study of water is going to be what we call the stable water cluster. That's really the name of this. We call this double helix water because if you get a lot of them together, you make strong concentrations of these, they always want to form a double helix. But to begin with, it is just a cluster of water that has gone solid.
Well, let me ask you this. The fact that you say that once they're concentrated, they tend to form double helix, do you think that could lead to the explanation of the development of life in water initially?
Well, we do, and I can only say that's our theory. We haven't been able to prove that yet. We have some research in the wings that we're going to be doing at several universities. Yen and I were just in UCLA the week before last, and meeting with some professors there that we've known for many, many years. We think that we know life had to, it sprang from water at some point, and then we look at the age of the Earth about 3.5 billion years. And, you know, people say, well, how did it start? Well, I think it was very simple. I think it started from water. I think there was a particle that formed that went solid. And that particle, I think, is the stable water cluster. And then what's going to happen next? Well, it's got a charge to it. It has a big polar, what's called a polar charge. So it's kind of like a little, magnet next to another one. So it's going to stick to the other one. And then another one's going to stick to it. And now you've got your first structure. And you also sort of got your first communication because it has a charge. There's a flow from one particle to the next, and these are tiny particles. These are in the nanometer size. An idea of what a nanometer is: if you took a hair off your head and you cut that hair into 100 pieces sideways, that would be a micron, because your hairs are around 100 microns across. So if you had to slice a hair sideways 100 times, you'd have 1 micron. So now you're going to have a powerful microscope to see that. But now you're going to have to cut that hair into 1,000 pieces sideways. And then you're going to have a nanometer. And so that's where these particles live. They live down in the nanometer area. So they're tiny, tiny things. So as far as a single-cell organism, these things are tiny, minuscule particles. But we actually think because when you make these particles and they want to immediately form a double helix, it's kind of like telling us that the charge relationship of these particles is such that it can only build a double helix. And so, what's the most important double helix we have, and where did life? We know life comes from DNA, and we just think that DNA came from water, and we think it actually came from this first, this what we call genesis phase of water, or the very first phase of water.
So you think you're looking back in time, and you're seeing some of the developmental strategies of life, very possibly.
Yeah, we do, and the thing about the the difference between, for instance, our line of research, what Yin and I have been involved for about the last 17 years, and let's say biological research. And there you have, in our research, everything is based upon a charge and math, really. It's basically we calculate everything before we even start on a project. And so we really don't do statistical analysis. Like for instance, if I want to test a new drug, if I was in the medical research, I would give it to X amount of people, and I would, you know, give X amount of people a placebo, and then I do statistics afterwards to see how many of those people improved compared to the placebo, and then I look at also how many people had side effects in comparison to who didn't have side effects or to the placebo. But the problem with that is you don't have a clue what's going on in a biological system, because if you give a drug to a person, you've got and this next book we're writing right now, we just as a sort of for the fun of it, we tried to calculate. We took like a statin drug, which is a very, very prominent drug in the U.S. We try to calculate what are the possible combinations in your body of that drug. How many could there be? And in the end, we gave up. Because we looked at all the different possible combinations in the body, and it was absolutely an astronomical number. It was about 10 to the 15th. And we went, well, so you'll never, even if people get well, all of a sudden, you'll never understand why they got well. You won't know what occurred in the body. Maybe they gave them this drug, but it had some reaction with a piece of body chemistry or another drug you're giving them. And you'll never know the exact cause. But whereas what we've been trying to do is from strictly a particle physics point of view, what is the exact relationship of this particular water particle with any kind of body chemistry? Because we're not adding anything into the equation. We're adding a piece of a charge. In other words, we're adding like a little battery. So it appears that by going down this research, we may have some understanding soon of sort of how to wake up the body's own innate healing mechanism, like an immune trigger. And that's what we're trying to do. We're not trying to add any more chemistry in the bottle because it's just too complex. We'll never understand it that way. I don't care how many studies you do. You'll never have a rock-solid understanding. But by dealing with a simple water particle that has a big polar charge to it, now we want to go into cellular studies, and we want to look at, do we increase ATP production, which is adenosine triphosphate, which is the molecule that's inside your body that energizes everything in your body.
Let's bring that conversation into a little more clarity with our listeners, because, for instance, if someone has something like chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia, what we're finding is that there is a problem in this exact mechanism of creating cellular energy, which then reflects into overall energy.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And so that's where we want to look. Yin and I are a little sometimes perturbed because people don't want us to look into biological systems. You have to leave that up to the doctors. Well, we got 25, 30 doctors that work with us, all MDs. But the reality is that physics belongs in medicine more than anything else. Because you have to understand that when you get into it, by the time you get to chemistry, which is where that ATP is manufactured, it's manufactured in the mitochondria of the cells, and there's a whole big cycle that's called the Krebs cycle. I'm sure you're familiar with it, and it's how this molecule is made. But by the time you get to that point, it is so complex, it is just... from a physics viewpoint, you've gone way, way, way too far. You need to come way back to the beginning of it. How do these processes work from a strictly electrical charge phenomena? Then if you understand that, now you have some place to start. You've got a model you can build. You can actually eventually probably calculate the whole thing. And if you can calculate it, then you can control it, and you can understand it from sort of like if you're writing a piece of code for or trying to decipher some software on a computer. Well, if you can get back to those first lines of code that were written, the very first, you know, the guy's got some basic assumptions, and he goes blah, 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 and he puts those down on a computer. Then he builds everything on top of that. And sure, after, you know, 6 months or a year or 5 years of writing software, he's got a whole operating system. But it started with some very basic lines of code, the first assumptions of how the whole thing's going to be built. And that's why we think this water particles is so important. We think it's like some of the first, it's like the first piece of code, you know, in the body. I mean, and that's why we call it Genesis phase, because we think it's like the first lines of code. And it's, people always ask me, they say, well, you know, what do you mean code in a body? You know, body doesn't have binary code. And yes, it does.
Well, it seems like from what you share in your book, Double Helix Water, has the 200-year-old mystery of homeopathy been solved, that not everyone appreciates these new research discoveries that you're making and that you have had some problems. Why is that always the case, that when people are discovering new things, it seems to become, like, politically unpopular? No, in terms of getting funding, and instead in terms of being questioned by authorities. Hello, are you there? Uh-oh, we might have lost David Gann. So what we will do is we'll take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we'll get David Gann back on the line, and we will continue our conversation about double helix water as the 200-year-old mystery of homeopathy been solved.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Calling all women, are you looking for truthful answers to help you safely and naturally navigate the many hormonal challenges that you face during your lifetime? This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. I'm a naturopathic doctor, author, psychotherapist, writer, and women's health advocate. Join me entering into the Women's Healing Circle, a weekly call-in show with the holistic practitioners, authors, researchers, and wise elders who share truthful information, education, and wisdom. Join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time to enter the Women's Healing Circle, right here on Progressive Radio Network.
Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
Mike Fader here. Every Thursday following Gary Null from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I will expound and expand on stories, both personal and public, attempting to make the sometimes ephemeral but always essential connections between our internal landscapes and our external lives. So please join me, Mike Fader, Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time for The Turning Point, here on the Progressive Radio Network.
Houston, we have a problem.
Hi, I'm Christiane Brown. In today's 24-hour news cycle, cycle, most people get about a minute of real truth. Not on the Solution Zone. Every week, I bring in America's best-known activists, bloggers, authors, and politicians to uncover the hidden issues that help separate the truth from the spin.
The Solution Zone with Christiane Brown, every Wednesday at 3 on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Imagine that means our guest is back.
And yes, I am.
Very good. Thank you again for being here with us today, and allow me to reintroduce you. We were having a very interesting conversation about the deep meaning of the research that you've been doing on double helix water, and you can find out more on the website. Double helix water. Has the 200-year-old mystery of homeopathy been solved, with David Gann and Dr. Lowe, Ph.D., along with a wonderful introduction written by Dr. Norm Shealy. Now, Dr. Shealy and I know each other many years, and in my book, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, I actually feature a system that Dr. Shealy developed where you can, through using various kinds of electronic stimulation and massage and DHEA, actually increase your own production of hormones, which lead to, well, something that now is called aging gracefully. I like to call it aging gracefully instead of anti-aging. I'm really not anti-aging. I love aging. I think it's the best part of life. But I certainly want to do so with all my faculties together, with tons of energy. And it looks like, when we were talking about energy here, that this water that you have been working on actually can lead to having more energy and cellular rejuvenation. Are you there, David? Well, it looks like we lost David again, so I'm just going to go ahead and discuss some of those things in terms of energy medicine right here on The Natural Nurse. And engineers, if you get David back again, you know, you can certainly let me know. Because in the my own research that I have done on energy medicine, we have evaluated how many different systems affect cell physiology. And one of the many kinds of research that I did was actually with sound technology. And at that time, I worked with a musician, and we looked at the music that he put together, that's Stephen Halpern, and we looked at what kind of effect sound has on cell function, and also the relationship between cell function and DNA, similar to what David Gann was talking about with double helix water. And what we found is that certain sounds actually influence how white blood cells move around. And, you know, the white blood cells are your defense mechanism in your body. So if your white blood cells are moving around very well, recognizing various kinds of invading microorganisms, then they are able to basically get rid of anything. Let's say there's little cancer cells there that you really don't want floating around. Or if there's any kind of invading microorganism, such as a pathogenic bacteria, likewise. So what's so amazing is that the sounds that are in your environment actually can influence how well your body can deal with incoming challenges. And what we found specifically is when we looked at a person's blood cells after they listened to healing music, such as Spectrum Suite, which was done by Stephen Halperin, that the white blood cells actually increased in their ability to kill off various kinds of disease-causing microorganisms. And when someone listens to a sound that was very disruptive, let's say, such as a leaf blower, that's what I did. I actually had people listen to a recorded leaf blower and then check their blood cells before and after listening either to the leaf blower or to the music. We found that when you listen to a leaf blower, as you might imagine, you can feel it really stressing your body out, but one of the true measurable changes there is that it causes your white blood cells to stop moving around, stop recognizing various invading microorganisms, and it is unable to kill off those things. So really it puts you into a very a state of severe stress. So that's one of the things that happens when you're under the influence of negative energy fields. In this particular case, we were looking at sound waves, which have a particular kind of formation. It's a longitudinal formation as they hit your eardrums, but there are many other kinds of energetic factors as well, as David Gann was describing in terms of double helix water. And then what we found is that when you listen to the sound of Crystal Suite, which was music performed by Stephen Halperin, that it actually increased the ability of your white blood cells to surround and get rid of any kind of microorganism that might be coming into the cell. So I found that that is really, really interesting because stress, of course, is a common part of everyday life. You might talk about stress as an environmental influence, such as sound, light waves that are coming into you, electromagnetic fields that are coming into you by sitting in front of a computer. And chronic stress does contribute to illness, and in many cases, the most critical aspect of the stress is not the event itself, but how you interpret or respond to the situation. And by using something like double helix water, and actually they have it, so they have isolated that double helix water in a way that you actually can access it and get it and actually drink it. So that actually can help to de-stress the environment for you. Now, it can be defined as a reaction to any stimulus or interference that upsets normal functioning and disturbs either mental or physical processes. So stress can be brought on, as we mentioned, by conditions such as illness, pain, emotional conflict, poor coping skills, such as bereavement. You know, also, of course, like so many people are influenced by today, financial problems due to the loss of a job or a decrease in income or increased expenses such as trying to get to work when the gas is now approaching $5 a gallon. And there is a finite amount of adaptation energy which your cell has, and that actually declines with increasing or continuous exposure to various stressors. So that's somewhere where using something like double helix water may be able to give the cell more of a bank account to use against stressful influences. And the response to stress is the same, regardless of what the stress is. And I think that's something that's very interesting in terms of the adaptation to stress. So if somebody is constantly under stress, it's going to increase the release of specific hormones that shuts down your body's ability to deal with things. Because, you know, the stress, if in the old days when we used to live out in the jungle, if the stress, let's say, was a giant animal that's going to get you, well, it's not too important to worry about your immune system at that point or your digestive system. All you want to do is get away. That's the protective mechanism that your body goes into when you get the flight or fight response to stress. And stress may be caused by an acute, short-term, unpleasant mental or emotional experience, and that causes specific physical reactions, or it can be caused by a long-term situation. And that has a much higher level of impact on health. And that's where using things that can bring your body back into balance can be so useful. For instance, stress can also have positive effects and can cause the body to move into an adaptation mechanism, which can be helpful to overall health. So other kinds of symptoms, and you can check out for yourself if you have any of these stress-induced problems, include fatigue. And if you remember, we were talking about cellular fatigue as well as overall fatigue. And fatigue can be very common in processes such as chronic fatigue syndrome. That's where it's got its name. Or in fibromyalgia or in arthritis. In fact, if you look at several of the books that I have written, such as Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, we talk about these cellular problems due to stress and their role in the development of long-term disabilities and degenerative illnesses such as arthritis, anxiety, shortness of breath, constant headaches, stomach problems, and the inability to focus can all be caused by stress. Now, there are a lot of things that you can use to help your body sort of resist these onslaughts, these constant onslaughts of stress. And one is alpha-linolenic acid, because alpha-linolenic acid has been shown to help reduce the effect of mental stress. And flaxseed is a good source of that. You may want to be sure that that's organic. You can use flax oil, but what I like to do is just buy organic flaxseed and put them in the freezer so that they stay really fresh, and then I just take them out as I'm going to use them and then just grind them up right before use, and then I use them, I would say, as a something that you can sprinkle on like a meal of some kind. And I really like that because then you're going to get it in its freshest form. And there's actually specific studies showing that. For instance, there is a study called The Effect of Flaxseed with Differing Content of Alpha-Linolenic Acid and Lignans on Responses to Mental Stress. And this was published in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition in 2003. Another good supplement to use is vitamin C, because vitamin C has actually been measured to reduce the level of stress-related hormones in the body. And this is according to a randomized controlled trial of high-dose vitamin C for reduction of blood pressure, cortisol, and subjective responses to psychological stress. And this was in the Journal of Psychopharmacology. Yes.
Ellen, I'm told to interrupt you.
Okay.
They have me on a good line here, they say. So
well, we have about 5 minutes, so what I've been doing is talking about some of the other things that we can use to help reduce stress.
I thought I've been listening. I was just going to listen because exactly. I think Norman Shealy years ago told me that all illness is stress related. And he said, you know, stress has to do with not just emotional stress, but he says, you know, a blow to the body, you know, causes a stress reaction. Electricity causes stress reaction. Chemicals absolutely cause stress reaction. And I think maybe that's why we're seeing some of the effects that we're seeing with this water, is that the body has mechanisms that handle the stress. But what we're doing, I think, with this water particle is we're just adding a little bit of energy into that process to help the body on a cellular level handle that stress. And I can't say too much about that because we haven't done enough research on it. We're still in the physical part of this water particle.
Well, what are some of the things that you have studied? Because I took a look at your website, doublehelixwater.com, and we have some very interesting pictures of people who actually used the water, and it did, through thermal imaging, make various changes.
Well, this is our research now, and so what we've been doing, for instance, in inflammatory response, like arthritis, you look on the internet there, you'll see a picture of a lady that has severe arthritis in her arms and hands. She's in her 60s. And then you'll see a picture just about 15 minutes after we give her a few drops of this water. This is a few drops of this water. It's put into a glass of distilled water, and then she drinks that. And it's a remarkable change. And also you'll ask her what the change is, and she'll say, you know, her arthritis is just tremendously better. So, but this is the research. We don't understand yet why this happens. Now, we theorize we understand why it's happening. It's because we believe that if we affect the mitochondria, and if we produce more ATP, then it's going to help any kind of inflammatory condition. But Yin goes even further than that. Now, of course, his first love is particle physics. And then if you look at his book, our book here, on the very end of it, you'll see that he's been spent many, many years at National Laboratories studying particle physics. But he, in the last number of years, has gotten very interested in Chinese medicine. And he's sort of become done a PhD in Chinese medicine now. And he believes that this whole area for 2,000-3,000 years in China that has to do with an electrical system in the body called meridians. And he's saying he actually thinks these things exist, and that's what we're really focused on now, to see if we can actually find these meridians and analytically show the existence of them. We do, you know, people do this all the time with acupuncture, and one of the first people I met that was doing this was Norman Shealy, who is a neurosurgeon, but he uses acupuncture. And if these meridians can be found, what's probably going on and why these people are getting so much relief and it's better so quickly by drinking this water is the fact that the meridians are made up of these charged polar particles. These things line up and make circuits. We see them with atomic force microscopes. We see them with electron microscopes. They're charged. They're like a little piece of wire, a tiny little piece of wire, and they want to go end to end, and they want to make circuits. And so it could be that when you take these into your body, you repair these meridians. If these meridians are actually have an existence, they're probably going to be made of these particles, because these guys, it's circuit building material. And that's my background. I came from microelectronics industries prior to getting into this research. And it's like these particles are the right shape, the right size, the right polar charge to build circuits. And so Yin theorizes that we are repairing the meridians with these. And it makes sense from a thermal image viewpoint. If you see one thermal image that's X amount of heat, and then just a few minutes later you see all this heat dissipate, well, how does heat dissipate just from a physics viewpoint? It has to go, it drains off through some kind of conductivity. And if it, because this, when you see these pictures, the image just sort of becomes symmetrical. The heat drains away from the area, and the people experience relief. So that's something that we want to go forward on. We've got some work that we're anxious to start on here this summer, and we're going to see if we can prove or disprove that. Either way, we'll learn something.
That's true. Now, what about the piece for homeopathy? I know the subtitle of your book is, "Has the 200-year-old mystery of homeopathy been solved?" How do you bring that in to the book, Double Helix Water?
Well, in homeopathy, the sort of the general practice is to take something that's water-soluble and dilute it. You percuss it or you shake it, and then you keep diluting it. You will actually, if you can get enough, if you get clean water and keep your water clean, you're always going to end up with some of these particles, because these particles form because of ultra low dilutions. Now, the difference between this double helix water and, say, just a normal homeopathic preparation is that we go through unbelievable sort of precaution to to isolate every possible variable. I mean, these are done in clean room conditions. They're done in, under controlled atmosphere conditions. They're done in containers that have been that we use particle counters on to remove any and all particles inside the containers. And so we by doing that, we found that we can concentrate the particle that forms hundreds of times, possibly thousands of times more than what if you did it just in atmosphere and used a traditional homeopathic technique. But basically, I think the particle that forms when you do something homeopathically is this particle. And it's described in the book, and I try to describe it very easily, and I know we're kind of running out of time here, but it, you know, to, if you ask Ian and I, is this a scientific basis behind homeopathy? We'll say, absolutely. We have no doubt that this is why homeopathic remedies work, and they should work. It's not like they shouldn't work. You're creating a particle. That particle is going to form. It's going to have a shape and size. It's going to have a polar charge to it, and it's going to wake up a cellular process. And we believe that there's a lot of truth in the fact that these different kinds of remedies that are made will have different types of effect, because we're beginning to see different geometries of the particles that are formed. So, use this for this remedy and that for this remedy. But in essence, probably why they work is they still have somewhat of a charge configuration of the original particle, and so consequently they stimulate some cellular process to trigger an immune response.
But it's still very interesting, the fact that as we dilute it more and more, that the effect seems to get deeper and deeper.
Yeah, and that's why if you keep your processes extremely clean, the more you dilute, the more these particles will grow, and so you're just going to get larger and larger concentrations of them. The problem and I talk about in the book with homeopathy is that most of it's done in atmosphere, and the problem with atmosphere today, there's about 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and so consequently, in clean water, if that CO2 is around clean water, you're going to build an acid, a carbolic acid, and so your process is going to be overwhelmed with one particular kind of a particle, because these things really form when you get down into dilutions about one part per million is where they really start forming in larger numbers.
Well, you're so right. We're just about out of time here, unfortunately. It was a very fascinating book, and I enjoyed it. And people can look up more about your work by going to doublehelixwater.com. Has the 200-year-old mystery of homeopathy been solved? So for those of you who are interested in deep studies, current research, and healing technologies that are coming our way as we move towards the future, certainly this is something you would want to check out. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, at www.naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and hoping that you stay healthy. Thank you.